Why wouldn't you like to find that teleportation device that they may have used a long time ago? I wonder if you would have dabbled with it. Craig Hines, our guest, will be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Let's go back, Craig, to the EVPs that you were talking about, that they are bleed-throughs from other dimensions or parallel universes. I find this to be fascinating. Most ghost hunters will say, no, those are ghosts. We recorded their sounds. They haven't left this plane, but you think otherwise.
Well, I do think that they might be the spirits of the deceased, but the perspective that I'm taking with it is that it's actually supporting what the ancient texts describe. And in that way, it says that whenever you read texts like the Bible or even Egyptian stories, it says that whenever a person dies, their spirit separates from their body and goes into this other dimension or this other realm. In the Bible, it's referred to as like Sheol or the underworld, and generally it was an unpleasant place. I know a lot of people might find it a little controversial because everyone wants to believe that whenever you die and the good people go to heaven and bad people go to hell, but that actually isn't what's supported in the text. They say that everyone, for at least a certain time, all go to the same place, which is essentially this holding tank, and it's not really the most pleasant of places, but it's not abysmal either. And whenever I've listened on Coast before with people like the Ghost Investigating Society, many times Art said about it's rather disturbing that these voices seem upset, or they don't know why they're there or where they are. Or they say that it's cold. I mean, none of them are describing things like, oh, it's so beautiful here and this and that.
Right, never a pleasant experience for them.
Yeah, exactly. And that actually supports what the ancient scribes tell us. And so I really think that there's something to it. And even going with this whole hyperdimensional aspect to it, it's essentially whenever you talk to a theoretical physicist, they say that it's too difficult for us to explain what these other dimensions might be like, because we're so accustomed to thinking of three spatial dimensions and one temporal dimension of time. So what they have to do is consider it in lower dimensions whenever they explain it, such as a being that existed only in two-dimensional space, such as like a flat sheet of paper. Now, it can only move left and right, up and down, and everything like that. But for us, we're a three-dimensional being. We can look at it from above, and we can move around it, and we could reach down and pick it off that piece of paper and everything like that. But it would never see us because it can't look up. And so what I think is that the spirits, whenever they separate from our bodies, they're actually existing in this higher dimension so that they can see us, but we can't see them. And so that's why even times you get this interaction where they're telling the ghost investigators to get out of their house or things, and they seem confused because it's like, why aren't you listening to me? I can see you, I can touch you, but the ghost investigators never seem to notice.
The sounds that bleed over onto recorders, tape recorders, now digital recorders, how is that possible?
That is quite a mystery. I think there might be something with the electromagnetics or just the intention of the spirits. It's really tough to say, but the point is that we're picking it up somehow. I don't know how, and I don't know. It doesn't happen all the time, but it seems like whenever you go to locations that are reported to be haunted, oftentimes you can get these EVPs. So while some of them might be just mislabeled or misunderstood, a lot of times it's just static noises and things like that, there are some that come through so crystal clear that you know it's human speech. You know it's not a radio station that got picked up and it's just a garbled mess and you only heard background noise that sounded like a voice or something, you know, especially if it's showing some sort of interaction with the people. So I really don't know how they get imprinted onto the tapes, but I think the real point that should be stressed is that somehow they are being imprinted on the tapes.
Well, in most cases, though, the EVPs are picked up at areas where somebody has died or someplace that has had a tragic story, which leads me to believe that they are the voices of the dead.
Yeah, I would definitely think so. And it's possible that some of them, they could be other spirits or things like that. But I think that because if if there really is a spirit within each person that then gets separated, it would seem to be tied to very closely to our dimension. So if you consider like different levels of heaven or these different dimensions, probably the one that's closest to us is the realm where our spirits would exist.
Tell us your impressions of the afterlife, because you have kind of a jarring view of this.
Well, as I was saying, generally the texts say that it's not something that was really desired. It was generally just a cold, dreary place. Sometimes it's described as being dusty, but a lot of times that seems to be with cultures that were primarily like desert dwellers. But basically, it's not something that is all bright and happy.
Well, what happened to the pearly gates and all that?
Well, that's part of it. Now, that is interesting, you know, St. Peter, the gatekeeper. I think that it's just that we're not allowed access to that yet. It's really up to us to develop this gateway technology on our own, like we sort of attempted in the past, if you look back at the story of the Tower of Babel, but that project was stopped. But if you look back through the text, there's all these little secret meanings and messages that are referring to essentially that is what we're supposed to do. It's just that we weren't supposed to do it back then. So until we can accomplish this, our spirits are just going to reside in this other dimension known as Sheol until we can create these gateways that then allow the spirits to be translated to and from these other dimensions for us.
Well, what do you think ghosts might be then?
Well, it depends. There's some where I would say that it is the spirit of a deceased person, but it's essentially the soul, the intelligence. They seem to have some sort of interaction. There are other times where you have sort of repetitive hauntings or things like that where I don't know if it's necessarily a spirit, but it might be some sort of time-recorded event that just keeps recurring. So it's really tough to say whenever you're saying about, like, a ghost, because that's a term that some people, they report ghosts, but it's not something that they directly interact with. And then other times, it's something that, you know, like I said, it, on the EVPs, they don't find out till later, but it's something that was intelligent interacting with them. It picked up the noises from the room where they were. So that's really... I would have to say a ghost is, for the most part, the spirit of a human that is just trapped in this dimension that's closest to us.
Last night, Craig, I had a demonologist on, a ordained exorcist, and, you know, he's been through some incredible things, some haunted things, and I, in this particular case, we do have evil spirits. We do have demonic possessions. I don't think you're not denying that. I haven't heard you say that doesn't exist.
No, I do think that that can exist. It's just a lot of times whenever I've seen specials on television or different things like that, it's essentially, I think that they're not so much the people who are demonically possessed. It's just that they might have something wrong with them, and it basically in their head they might think they're possessed, but it doesn't seem to match what the ancient text described. And according to the Book of Enoch, it says that the whole origin of demonic possession was that whenever the Nephilim spirits were slain, that since they were born of the earth, that they were just like human spirits and that their spirits were bound to the earthly realm. And so they wanted to reclaim bodies, and so they would try to force their spirits into humans, and that would be demonic possession.
So you do not deny that evil exists?
No, I definitely believe it has to, because there couldn't be good without evil.
And did it come through the porthole like these other creatures might have?
I think that something did. You know, I mentioned the fallen angel Azazel. And
how did we get their names, by the way?
Well, it depends. Like I said, Azazel, I think it has something to do with like the strength of God. But a lot of times with angelic names, it has the El ending. It's a shortened form of Elohim, which refers to God or the gods. And it can also mean like shining ones or mighty ones. And so a lot of times their names were really titles. that were applied to it, and sometimes it showed their role in the story. Like I said, Azazel is sometimes translated as scapegoat, and it fit with his story about how he took all the blame for the sins of the Watchers. Then you have the leader Shemyaza, who his name translates as the strong name, and according to some of the ancient texts, it suggests that he was in possession and had the knowledge of the holy name of God, and that is what he used to operate these gateways. So whenever you take the name Shemyaza, it, you know, I think that he knew something about the name of God that he told the angel Ishtar, or, well, she was a human that then turned into an angel.
Why did they leave?
Well,
I assume they left.
Yeah, some of them were banished, according to the text. Other ones said that they left because their only goal was to give humanity a jump start.
And what do you mean by jump start? What's your definition of that?
I would say with teaching us how to build a civilization and just for most purposes, just how to go about daily life so that we could eventually accomplish and build ourselves up to then become like them.
What were we before the jumpstart?
I would have to say just, you know, primitive, like you have the caveman or the Stone Age and things like that, and it just the hunter-gatherer types, and I don't think that there was any actual genetic manipulation on their part, but I do think that they brought knowledge, and knowledge is power.
Okay, so they're either banished or they leave. They go back to their dimension. At some point, they say, our job is done.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for instance, in South America, the Quetzalcoatl god, he said that, okay, I'm going to leave you, but one day I will return. And his symbol was Venus, and there's all sorts of symbolism with, you know, the feathered serpent tied to him, and you also find that even with Jesus about the returning God, and there's serpent symbolism tied with Jesus, which I know many people will find controversial, but it's right there in the Bible. But essentially, you just have these same stories about how we should be expecting to one day encounter these beings once again because we need to, but my readings of the text indicate that it's really up to us. If we're just going to sit back and wait for it to happen, it might never happen, and then it might be too late for us.
Amazing. Now, you also talk about global warming and climate change affecting some of these portals or gateways. How can that be?
Well, it's not so much that they affected the portals or gateways, but I do think that like, for instance, the story of Noah's flood, it's found all throughout the world some sort of devastating climactic change, and it's often associated around the time whenever these angels were here. I think that part of it was that maybe something happened to us that, you know, we nearly got wiped out, and so part of it was that the angels needed to help us. Some of it is blaming the angels for what happened, and so they say that that's the reason for the flood. It's really hard to say, but basically, I think that...
Wasn't this supposed to be the cleansing to do away with the Nephilim, the evil ones at the time?
That's what's described within the Bible, yes.
Right.
But it also says that that didn't work because they were on the earth again later on. And the gateway explanation does sort of help to solve that because they could have escaped through these gateways, and then once all was clear, they could just return again. But as far as the whole global warming issue, I would have to say that I really think that it happens in cycles, and so it's going to happen again for us. And based upon what scientists tell us about the past, we've encountered extinction events in the past where nearly 90% of all life on Earth, including in the oceans and insects and everything like that, was wiped out. So we really shouldn't be gambling with our lives and the future of the planet like that, because we might have a solution as to how to escape this.
One of our dear friends, Lawrence Gardner, has written at quite lengthy pages about the monatomic gold, which you have also investigated.
Yes, I came across it through Lawrence Gardner. I had never heard about it before him, but apparently a man by the name of David Hudson had discovered this material back during the 1970s. He was a wealthy farmer in Arizona,
right?
And he noticed this like black precipitant in his soil whenever he was doing like the usual work to get the soil prepared for farming. And he noticed that whenever it was left out in the sun, that it would actually like explode in a flash of light, and it just seemed to disappear. And so over the years, he got in contact with, you know, many different scientists and different labs, and he apparently spent a lot of money, you know, millions of dollars to get this tested. But essentially, he had some problems, and the project basically got shut down.
But this has been around a long time, way before this farmer found it.
Yeah, it has. According to what Lawrence Gardner is indicating, I really think that there are ancient descriptions where it talks about white stones and white powder, or the manna, which was also known as angel bread.
Yeah. See, Lawrence said that if you ingest it, you can levitate with it.
Yeah, now I've heard that, but I have not seen any evidence to indicate that. But something that I do find interesting is, according to what David Hudson was saying, that whenever they were testing this material, that it would actually sort of appear to levitate whenever they heated it up to a certain degree, and then it would also disappear, and they thought that it was disappearing into another dimension. So in the book, I'm offering this hypothesis of, if it is the same stuff that is referring to as this angel bread or manna, then perhaps if it's actually flowing through your bloodstream, and then you were to enter into one of these devices, like the gateways, that something in the gateway would then activate that monatomic gold that's flowing through your body and transfer you into the other dimension.
That is incredible. The work that so many people have done to contribute to this, and again, I keep coming back to, regardless of what story might be the correct one, or maybe you're all right. Did you ever think about that?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think we all have, you know, pieces of the puzzle. It's just that whenever I started investigating some other authors, I was like, oh, man, this guy's great. And then whenever I started looking up some stuff, I would find that some of their sources weren't that reliable, or that they were taking information out of context. And so I really had to stop and rethink how I was going to go about it. And so I just had to really be meticulous in checking my sources and verifying information. And so I'm not offering the only solution to this. I think this is all a part for us to solve. But basically, I think that this might be the closest to solving it, because it doesn't require some of the leaps of logic, so to speak, because most of it I can base on the text and other things, where some of these other authors take it, and whenever I go back and read the text, I'm like, that isn't what it says. They're taking it out of context, or they're changing the meaning of the words.
How do you answer people, though, who say that they have truly had angelic experiences, that, you know, the hand has pulled their car back to the safe side of the road, that the person who was drowning, as I mentioned, got pulled out of the ocean and saved his life? What do you tell those people who truly believe that they've had these experiences?
Well, I really don't know what to say.
I mean, something's happening to them.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think that they're making it up or anything like that.
No.
I mean, I don't know, because, I mean, I certainly believe in these possibilities, but until I experienced something like that for myself, I wasn't there at that time whenever that happened for that person. So it's not really for me to say, yes, that's true, or no, that isn't. So, I mean, I never want to deny somebody, you know, their own personal experiences with that. It's just that I say, well, that's very interesting. I mean, I wish we had something more to go on with it, but I can't completely agree with them, and I don't have any evidence to indicate that they're doing anything otherwise. So it's really not for me to say whether they're accurately portraying it.
Craig, when we come back, let's find out if there are any secret messages embedded in these ancient texts that we've been talking about tonight. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with Craig Hines on Coast to Coast AM. His website, gatewayofthegods.com. Okay, next hour we'll take your phone calls. That's when we will flip the switch and open up the lines. But I'll be back with Craig Hines in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Tell us a little bit about the work you've done, Craig, with the ancient texts.
Well, basically what I did was I would go and buy several different versions of it, or the ancient dictionaries. And so then if I had an ancient text there, I would be able, as I'm reading through, to look up if there are any notes about this word or another word. And then I can actually go and verify the information in something like a dictionary or some online source, that so I could trust the translation was accurate, or if there were other translations available that perhaps made more sense if it was put in the context of my theories.
Now, what were some of the texts that you looked at?
One of the primary ones was the Book of Enoch.
All right.
Obviously, the biblical text. The Egyptian Book of the Dead, that's also known as the Papyrus of Ani. The Book of Jubilees was another one. And Lewis Ginsberg has collections of ancient Jewish stories, things like that. Other ones, too, were collections of mythologies from around the world in different places.
Now, was there a secret message at all embedded in any of these texts?
Oh, definitely. One of the main ones I kept coming back to was the idea of squaring the circle. And I found that symbolism very prevalent, in that the circle was often used to represent heaven. And usually it's because it's drawn with a single point, but it makes the continuous shape. And also, since it incorporates the value of pi, it offers unlimited potential because it's an infinite number. And then oftentimes the square shape would be used to represent earthly matters or the earthly realm, because it has fixed and it could represent the four directions, and you could easily calculate its values. So that was meant to represent the physical, where the circle was meant to represent the spiritual or heavenly matters. And so this whole theme kept recurring of squaring the circle, which in alchemic terms was the idea of making what is something of the earth equivalent to heaven and vice versa.
Well, explain, though, how this was used, because I'm a little confused.
Well, it's very complicated, but basically in alchemy, there's something referred to as the Philosopher's Stone, and what most people are told is that it was supposed to be about transmuting lead into gold, but the idea was actually to represent turning a human into a godlike being. So that was the symbolism there, and as I said, it was associated with this idea of squaring the circle. And so whenever you take it in that context, I really do think that it's meant that humans are supposed to become like the angels or become like the gods, which it even states in the Bible. It says, you know, do you not know that you are gods? Or other things where Jesus says that, you know, for a little time, you know, humans are lower than the angels, and, you know, suggesting that eventually we will be higher than the angels and rule alongside in heaven.
Is that the secret message that is in some of these texts, and does it show us how to get there?
Well, I think so. It definitely keeps pointing back to the Tower of Babel, which means the gateway of God. For instance, there's all sorts of symbolism with numeric values that are embedded in the ancient text, or even in the New Testament, where, for instance, Jesus, his name, if you actually take the values of the letters, it adds up to 888. Now, that seems significant just because of the triple eight structure, but it also puts into context other verses where he says, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. It doesn't just mean that he had unlimited power, and that he existed from before time and after time, but that he had all the power of the alphabet, because whenever you took the Greek alphabet and you arranged it into three rows with eight letters each, you would get that triple eight structure. So sentences like that are in the Bible are indicating that hidden meaning. Another value that's associated with him, because his symbol was the fish, was the number 153. And so whenever you have the story of the two apostles that are having difficulty catching fish, and so Jesus is on the shore and says, toss the net to the other side. And then it says that they didn't just catch a lot of fish, but it says specifically they caught 153 fish. And so the significance is that that number, 153, is involved in a Greek mathematical ratio that was known as the measure of the fish, which was drawn by two interlocking circles.
What does that mean?
Well, it was symbolic of that, but I don't know completely. It was just that ancient geometry that they held very sacred, and they would use that embedded into the text. For instance, there's...
Well, it's got to mean something, though.
Well,
we just haven't deciphered it yet?
Well, I think I'm getting to how it revolves back to the Tower of Babel, and that it's his symbol for is the fish. Now you have other Marys that are in the Bible, and there's numerous Marys, and if you add up their name, it means it adds up to 152, which is just short of the 153 number associated with Jesus and the fish.
Oh, no, but you're losing me here, Craig. I honestly, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
You're throwing all these numbers at me, and it doesn't mean anything. What you know, because my question was there a secret message in these texts? And if so, what the heck does it mean?
Okay. If you just please bear with me for a moment.
I'm trying to.
Yes, I'm sorry. It's one of those things where in the book you just have to lay out all this information in so many different places because it all starts connecting together, but you don't get there until the very end. And essentially you have the number 153. And now there's only one Mary that's actually in the Bible that gets the surname or a title added on, and that's Mary the Magdalene. Now, as I said, the other Marys add up to 152, which I think that signifies that they're just shy of having that equivalent with the Jesus figure. But Mary Magdalene, if you take the Magdalene, it adds up to 153. They had a deliberate misspelling of her name in there, so that it would add up to 153. Now, the significance, I think they were trying to single Mary Magdalene out, not in a Da Vinci Code way where she was the wife of Jesus or anything like that, but merely to so that if you knew this code, you could pick her out, and you knew that her name, Miriam, in Hebrew and Greek, means rebellion, but her title of the Magdalene means watchtower. So whenever you put it together, Mary Magdalene means the rebellious watchtower. The first thing that comes to my mind whenever I hear rebellious watchtower, it leads back to the story of the Tower of Babel.
See, these don't sound like messages to me. They sound like codes.
Well, I do think that they were codes, but if you remember whenever Jesus was talking to the apostles, they asked him, why does he teach everyone in parables? And he said that, well, to them I teach in parables, but you know the secrets of the mysteries of heaven. And so I think that the apostles, whenever they were actually writing down their information, they were doing the same thing that he was doing, where oftentimes he would say, for those with ears to hear, listen.
I think, though, he also talked in parables much like Nostradamus did, because I think they were concerned at that time, even though he was eventually arrested and crucified, I think they were concerned that if he talked in his straight tongue, he would have really been in trouble.
That could be. I mean, it was definitely a time where you didn't want to necessarily stand out for going against the government at that time or any type of authorities. And so if they expected to spread their message, then they needed to do it, you know, secretly. And so I think that they used a lot of these symbols and codes to do that.
Do these texts ever talk about end times or the apocalypse or that kind of prophecy?
A lot of that comes in with the biblical text, although you do find that all over the world with, the story of Ragnarok for the Norse and the European countries. Or then you have in South America and even North America with the Native Americans, and they speak about how the past destructions of the earth and how there will be another one, but they're waiting for the return of the Great White Brother. Again, referring to this white-skinned being that would then come to basically rescue everybody or help them out from this final destruction of the planet.
Who apparently visited many civilizations.
Yes, I believe so. So I really think, I don't know if it's always the same being, but I do think that It's definitely referring to similar contact experiences cross-culturally with the same race of beings, which would be these angels.
Did you ever get to any messages or codes that gave you specific timetables on when this being might return?
Not so much as to that. As I was explaining earlier, I really think that it's up to us. It's not going to happen until we essentially make it happen. They set us up. They gave us the message. It's up to us to decipher it, to figure it out, and then to develop methods of testing it. And if I'm correct in the whole gateway theory, if we can figure that out, then whole new realms of possibilities will open up to us.
Do you know if theoretical physics has ever gotten to the point where it might be able to point to these other worlds, these parallel dimensions?
Well, I know they're trying to do things like at the CERN lab. They're planning on doing some tests, and I'm not aware of anything specific, especially since that hasn't gone online yet.
No, but, right. They're having some problems there.
Yeah, but they're hoping that they'll be able to detect things like gravitons, which one theory is suggesting that normally gravity is considered very weak compared to the electromagnetic forces, but in this theory, they're saying that maybe it's just as strong as the electromagnetic forces, and it just appears weak because it's leaking into another dimension. And so at CERN, they're hoping to set up tests and things that maybe they can detect something known as a graviton.
Well, I'm also concerned that CERN, they might blow up half the planet if they don't know what they're doing.
Well, that might be, but I think I tend to trust that they do know what they're doing, but we always need to err on the side of caution and check and double check and triple check to make sure that what we're doing is the right thing.
You know, when you get into this ancient geometry, I mean, that's something for Richard C. Hoagland to shine. He and you could probably talk about that for 40 weeks.
Yeah, it's definitely, there was so much ancient geometry. I mean, there were just schools dedicated to it in the ancient world, and that's how they passed on this information, because we do know that mathematics is a type of universal language, and so the ancient geometry, it not only passed on the mathematical knowledge and information, but it could be symbolic, like I said, where a circle represents heaven because it's drawn with a single point, but it offers unlimited potential, and so a circle is an excellent choice to represent something of the unlimited potential of heaven, whereas something like a square is good for representing Earth and the fixed matter of the physical realm.
Our friend Whitley Strieber had an influence on you. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes, he did. I'd been listening to his show for a long time, and I read one of his books. It's well known to his fans. It was called The Key. And what I found interesting in it was that whenever I was reading through, he was describing this event where the stranger came into his room late one night and just started talking to him about all these different topics, like, you know, global warming and abrupt climate change. And essentially, though, this stranger told him that it's up to humanity to save itself, and that it was up to us to square the circle if we expected to survive it. And whenever I read that whole phrase about squaring the circle just blew me away for some reason, because it really seemed to strike at me as that was part of the secret to understanding what we were supposed to do. And so whenever I started going back through all the stories, I started looking at, wait, okay, squaring the circle, what does this mean in this context? And just whole new possibilities opened up to me then whenever I started rereading everything in that context.
So these beings that came down and visited us to help us, did they have any evil intentions at all?
It really depends on the context of how you want to look into that. If you read most of the stories from around the world, they're generally considered good. But now you have some of the biblical texts where they're considered bad, but again, in other cases, they're considered neutral. So I do think that it really depends on a case-by-case basis whenever you're referring to some of these beings, because it's dependent on what they did. For instance, whenever it's said about the angels giving humanity the secrets and knowledge of heaven, It wasn't necessarily a bad thing. It was just saying that some of it was maybe stuff that we weren't supposed to know at that point, because it said that they were secrets that they used in heaven or were reserved for use in heaven. So it's not that they were teaching bad things. It's just that they were teaching us things that maybe gave us a little too much power back at that time.
I don't know. I think if you look at Genesis, which you do not accept, I take it, right?
Well, in what way? I do believe there's definitely kernels of truth within it.
Yeah, but you don't believe in a devil. You don't believe in Lucifer being evil.
Well, yes and no. I would say that there is some sort of evil figure. It just, there always has to be something evil.
Did this evil figure come through this portal as the others did?
Well, I would say that the angel Azazel is definitely described that way. But referring back to the title of Lucifer, that is what's referred to for many people as this, like the first fallen angel or something like that.
The lead, I guess, right?
Yeah, but really that's not the case. Like I said, I was explaining at the beginning of the program about how a lot of that is tied with astronomy and the story of Venus. And in the ancient world, the pentagram was actually a symbol of kingship, and it was a good symbol. It was even a symbol of early Christianity. It wasn't until basically recent times whenever it's become a symbol associated with Satanism and things like that. But in the ancient world, Lucifer was referring to the planet Venus, which was known as the Dawn Star or the Morning Star. And how they derived the five-pointed star shape was because they knew that whenever planet Venus lined up with Earth in the sky, that they would plot the point, and then they would wait 584 days, and then it would line up again, and then they'd plot that point in the sky and wait 584 days and do it again. And after several consecutive periods, it would return to the same spot in the sky. And it took a period of 8 years. And whenever they did that, they would connect from point to point to point, and it formed a five-pointed star shape. And then over time, it also rotated in the sky. So it would take 160 years, but this star shape would rotate. And so you would have times with an inverted pentagram and other times with an upright pentagram, but it was always a symbol associated with kingship and with the ancient world.
Yeah, but you know what? There's so much evil on this planet. If they came down here to help us, it's obvious they didn't do a very good job.
I think part of it is that after they left, we got stuck in dogma and other things like that, so that we started sort of corrupting our own ideas. Like I said, a lot of this information is still there. It's just that a lot of the context clues have been removed.
See, I think we are them, Craig. I think we have taken their personality. The evil that's still in this planet today is an offshoot of what they brought us.
I think so, too. It's basically, I think that they might have started out with good intentions, but maybe they left a little too soon, or especially given that maybe things didn't go quite as planned originally.
Well, maybe they didn't have good intentions at all. I mean, maybe they came here from the get-go. Now, this is contrary to what you think, but maybe they came here from the get-go to destroy mankind.
Well, I really think if that was the case, then they could have done it right then and there. I don't know. It doesn't seem... I don't know. Whenever I go back and read it, it's just there's so many other ways of taking this information once you start putting the context clues back in, where it really changes your perspective. And like I said, I can see how people might think that way, that this was all evil and everything back then. But like I said, that's partially because all the context clues have been removed.
Well, let's find out when we open up the phone lines next. The floodgates are open.